It's June. The year is half over. So hopefully that means that by now you should have accomplished about 50% of your New Year's resolutions, right? If not, then you need some sharper tools, perhaps, to break through the resistance, to break through the glass ceilings and entropy of life that is imposing itself on your intentions and designs. And in Q&A podcast number 45 here, we are going to try to deliver that for you. Today, I'm joined by Joel Bine. Apparently, he has a methodology, a system for making limiting beliefs vanish in 15 minutes permanently. Limiting beliefs like Santa isn't real. That limiting belief might stick with me because I'm a dad. And so I'm in charge of purchasing. I'm basically the Santa here. but I look forward to hearing more about that. Joel, welcome to Limitless.
Thanks so much for having me, man.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about this system that you've got and some of the results from it. And I understand that you presented on this topic at the recent Upgrade Labs conference there in Austin. Is that right?
Well, it wasn't at the conference. It was just an acute event like 2 years ago. But yeah, I'm here in Austin. So I've seen Dave Asprey around and, you know, it's interesting how with biohacking, there's so many tools and so many approaches that are typically about the body. And then what I'm doing is kind of bringing in the mental, emotional, the subconscious, and which is, of course, tied into the body, right? But yeah, I mean, the Santa Claus thing, first of all I'm saying is, like, metaphorically, we can take any belief and in 15 minutes, we can clear that and it's gone forever, as if realizing Santa Claus isn't real. That's the metaphor I present people, because almost everybody has that experience growing up, believing Santa Claus is real. And then one day you connect the dots, you realize that you just bought into this mythology. You never actually had any proof. You never actually saw the dude, Santa. And so then once you have that moment, it's a light bulb moment, and then the belief is gone. And next Christmas, the belief doesn't come back. And so that's the same mechanism that you can employ with any limiting belief about yourself, about money, about relationships, about working, business, success. Once you realize that at the subconscious level, that when you created that belief, which is typically in some sort of traumatic experience or just emotionally charged experience when you were growing up, you know, then you help that part of the psyche realize that it never actually saw the belief. I'll say that again. It never actually saw the belief. All right. So there's a belief like making money has to be hard, or I'm not working enough, or I'm not good enough, or I'm not worthy of success. And these are wired in stories that are at the basis of your subconscious that are like feeding you all these negative thoughts or inner critics or stress emotions and those types of things. And so once you connect, have a logical conversation with that part of you that believes that story and help him, so to speak, or her, this little younger part of you, realize that that belief never actually happened in physical reality. Like, you never actually saw when your dad was yelling at you about your report card when you're 10, all you saw was your dad's face. You saw the report card, you saw the letter F, whatever. You saw things with your eyes, but you never actually saw, I'm a failure, right? You created this story as a kid trying to adapt. And then once you have that conversation with that younger part of the psyche, that's like that's the main part of the method. And then the belief just dissolves. So that, okay. I can share more from there, but that's kind of the mechanism.
Okay. So a conversation with a younger, more vulnerable, more tender, more impressionable part of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the origin, right? So that's why it's permanent as well, as we're getting down to the root. We're getting down to the root. And so that's why people struggle with like not following through on their New Year's resolutions, for example, is they might not be actually getting down to the root cause of why they're doing the bad habits, right? So maybe your bad habits are like scrolling on social media or some sort of health thing. You're eating junk food or something. You're doing these things you don't want to do. And then you can use like willpower. You can use discipline. You can use habit change and focus on behavior, and you can do certain techniques that can be really helpful. But from an actual root cause standpoint, getting curious, why would I even have the urge to go scroll instead of go do the thing that I want to do? Like do the project that's a, like people I work with struggle with procrastination. They feel stuck. You know, they feel like they're in a loop 24 hours a day, maybe like with their inner critics. They're feeling that resistance in their body to going to do that high leverage project or build the business or these types of symptoms, right? But if you actually get down to the root and you pluck out, so to speak, you pluck out the weeds that are in the mental garden, then the resistance goes away. And then you can actually have much more ease, flow, and calm and clarity about doing the actions that you want to do. So like I've had clients that, one of my recent clients, he was a leader at Meta actually, but he wanted to start a business, and he had this business kind of in his mind, but he hadn't actually taken the action on it, and he was feeling all this like lack of confidence and like this resistance and procrastination. And then he came to me, and then we found a lot of these beliefs like, I don't deserve success, or I'm lazy, you know, success has to be hard. These types of things are in the subconscious, and they're creating that resistance. They're creating the propensity to go procrastinate, right? And so once we unearth this, we cleared, you know, he just worked with me for like 8 weeks. We cleared 3 or 4 beliefs every week. Boom, and there's all this friction and debris that's removed, you know? The debris is removed from the runway and the plane can take off, you know? And then he's like, all of a sudden he's telling me, yeah, I'm like getting after it. I'm making this pitch deck. We're getting investors or like, and then just 2 weeks ago, he told me that he left his job and he's all in with the business. So he still needed to take action to get his results. But I think a lot of the action was a result of clearing out the root cause friction.
Okay. And reveal as much of the secret sauce as you're willing. What exactly happens in these 15 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to reveal. I've done live demos that you can hear on other podcasts. I've got a guide on my website where you can learn the basic steps if you want to learn this yourself.
We're going to have those linked below wherever people are listening or watching us.
Awesome.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, I was just saying that it's easier to understand it when you just experience it or witness it. But yeah, I can break it down a little bit more. But that's the secret sauce. The main crux of it is what I already shared, is like realizing that the belief doesn't exist in sense data, right? That's kind of the technical side of it. It's like you can't see with your eyes anywhere in the room that you're sitting in the belief, the concept of I'm not good enough, or the concept that I don't have enough money, or the concept that making money is hard. So once that part of the psyche realizes it, then it's a big light bulb moment. But I usually start off, it's like, again, we're starting with the symptoms to even find what the belief is. It's like, okay, you're feeling resistance in your body, or you're noticing inner critics in your mind, or you're having this insecurity in your relationship, or just, yeah, constant self-doubt. And then it's like, are you anxiety, right? People, like, I have clients that wait, like, say they wake up and they're just feeling anxiety or dread about the day, right? So, okay, so where do you feel that in your body, right? That's where I would tell the listeners to start. It's like, ask yourself, what are my symptoms that I don't want to experience, that I've just been trying to manage them with meditation or workouts, or, I mean, biohack stuff that can be really helpful, but how much of the root cause and the psychological, right? So what are you experiencing in your body? Like, okay, maybe you feel this tightness in your chest around this anxiety, right? And then you just, like, what I would ask people, clients, to do is, okay, if that tightness could speak, what would it say? And now we're seeing that as a separate part of the psyche. And again, it's like that we're starting to access that, maybe that inner child, that deeper part that's feeling something. And that's just related to your trauma growing up, typically. But you're letting that part speak, and it's like, oh, I'm worried about, like, having enough money. I'm worried about getting everything done today. I'm worried about what this person's going to think about me. I'm worried about X, Y, and Z. And then you get more information about what that feeling is thinking, right? It's like the feelings and the thoughts are the symptoms, right? So we have beliefs at the root, and feelings and thoughts, and then actions and outcomes, right? So you kind of get curious about what is it that's going on for that part of the psyche, and then it might give you, you keep asking questions until you find the deeper root belief. It's really about safety or love. Like, those are the core beliefs. If you have a belief that starts with the phrase, the way to be safe is, right? The way to be safe is to not disagree with people, right? If you're having, like, a people-pleasing thing and you're not speaking up with your significant other, right? Right? Or maybe the way to get love is to get approval, right? Those are core beliefs. Go ahead.
How does this compare with like Dr. Dispenza style meditation, which you're probably familiar with? Is it in the same vein or totally different?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I'm super interested in that body of work and, like, manifestation, if you want to call it that, at the broader level. But he's talking about the neurology of it, which is very interesting. And so his book, one of his books is Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. And so he's talking both about, okay, generate the imagination and the emotional feeling of your desire and focus on that. But he's also saying, allow the old self to let go, right? And so I would just say he's talking about the old self, like the old neurology, the old habits. But he's talking about that more in a, I guess, ethereal way, or just broader way, around just like noticing those emotions and letting those dissipate. And I'm getting more specific and concrete. I'm saying the reason you're having those old emotions, those undesirable emotions, is because there's a collection of beliefs. Like, if you think of, like, a collection of beliefs is like a meadow that has a bunch of dandelions, right? Each of those dandelions is a belief. So I've cleared almost 2,000 beliefs for myself for the past 5 years. Although I would just say what matters most is the first 50, the biggest ones that are, like, about self-worth or whatever, the big core ones. So those, the collection of beliefs, the collection of each dandelion, is contributing to the overall pattern. So this tool is a way to expedite all that, like letting go of the old self, letting go of the old frequency, letting go of the habit of being yourself, right? The breaking that old self and stepping into the abundance, stepping into the empowerment, stepping into the confidence, right? Whereas the old self is in that scarcity or that lack of confidence because it has certain beliefs. That's the only reason it has those. The lack of confidence is because of the belief. So we take one belief at a time and we pluck it out with this 15-minute system, and then that we remove those dandelions, and the more we do, the more we're just completely free.
Okay. Yeah, it's something I'd be interested in trying in the future. As I've done the Dispenza style epigenetic mindset transformation on a number of areas where my beliefs needed to be tweaked, in entrepreneurship, to sustain entrepreneurship, you need to get rid of a lot of old baggage. And then when I got married, there was old baggage that was not good for my marriage that I needed to reprogram. But the permanence that you're describing, well, that's something I'd have to experience for myself, because with the epigenetic meditation that you do in a 50-minute guided meditation, the Dispenza style, I really like that, but I couldn't really say it's permanent. I find that I need to re-up on that practice. I'll try to do it like a couple of times a month, usually on different mindsets, but I will find that if I revisit mindsets or beliefs that are holding me back or things that need to change, then it fortifies those things more in my behavior going forward. But you're saying that with what you do, it's 15 minutes, one and done.
Yeah, it sounds wild, and almost everybody who hears about it, including me, when I first came across this, there's a combination of skepticism and curiosity, which is totally normal. But in that vein, it's worth being aware that we also might have beliefs about change itself. So if anyone listening, you're noticing like any sort of response to this proposition about the permanence and the rapid nature of it as well. If you're noticing hesitation or skepticism, that's fair. You know, I want you to be a free thinker. Don't just believe some podcast guy. But like, could it be the case that you have meta beliefs about change, like change can't be fast, change has to be hard, I can't change, nothing I do works, right? So if you're doing a lot of personal growth, especially a lot of people come to me and they've done a lot of different things and they just assume that change has to be hard, or these meta beliefs actually get created as a result of trying a lot of things and not having permanent efficacy. And so that's why I start with clients day one is let's make sure any beliefs you have about change we clear. And now there's a whole new openness and possibility here. So you like, there's a whole lot in the culture about like, even just the belief it's too good to be true. Like, I'm not saying that nothing isn't too good to be true, right? There's things that are too good to be true. But what's happening if the subconscious believes as an absolute statement, it's too good to be true, because it's something he just got wired in from previous experience, and then that's just kind of running the show. As an absolute, then that's going to filter your own perception of what I'm saying right now, right? So when we clear the belief, we're not saying we're going to believe the opposite, that like everything is, like there's nothing that's too good to be true. You just get to have freedom and discernment about it. But yeah, it's definitely powerful, it's permanent, and I want as many people as possible to experience it. Because it's had such a big impact on my life. Like, I've done a lot of personal growth for about 15, 20 years, and journaling and therapy and morning routines and psychedelics even. And a lot of this stuff's very helpful, and I don't disregard it necessarily, right? I just want people to see, hey, if we're missing this key ingredient, which is getting down to the root, which is seeing like the left brain side of it. This is why it's different. It's like a lot of the methods are like, I'm guessing that meditation is helpful that you just mentioned, Jonathan, but my metaphor again with the dandelions is a lot of people might experience something like a meditation or a float tank or something, and it like you feel better and it gets you back closer to your true self. But it's sort of like taking a lawnmower on that field of dandelions. And then, yeah, fresh cut grass, the dandelions disappear and we're feeling good, right? But then 2 weeks later, those dandelions grow back because we didn't actually pluck out the actual root. Whereas this, we're actually getting down and helping logically that subconscious part realize that it never actually had proof for that concept. And it unhooks that concept from the emotional charge. And then boom, it just sounds, at the end, people just experience like, wow, that's kind of sounds ridiculous. That belief doesn't have an emotional charge anymore.
This sounds like something that people should really look into if they find themselves in patterns of sabotaging negative, counterproductive, primary romantic relationships. Because our relationships, when we're entangling our lives and bodies with other people, this is the area where human beings can become especially irrational. And that primary or our primary romantic relationships are almost kind of like the biggest lever factor in our lives. That if you choose the right person as a wife, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, if you choose the right person and if you manage that relationship correctly, then tremendous multiplier of everything that you do. But if you choose poorly, and then if you do do foolish things that you know you shouldn't really be doing that sabotage that relationship, then it can be this insidious force of destruction and mediocrity in your life. And those romantic relationships, those hook into like really deep, often very broken places inside of us.
100%. I'm glad you mentioned that one, because I don't always get the chance to talk about that particular domain. And it's so essential, because, of course, our romantic relationships are often mirroring our relationships to our parents growing up. And there's that attachment style that's kicking in. And so we often create beliefs about men or beliefs about women, which we then project onto the significant other, right? So, I mean, my story growing up was like my mom was super domineering towards my dad, and he had his faults as well. But like the biggest like chronic trauma for me was just like not being able to sleep because my mom's screaming at my dad, and like feeling this like sympathetic nervous system alertness and like on edge. And And so I've cleared almost 2,000 beliefs. So I've found a lot of origin memories for where these beliefs came from. And so I've cleared a lot of beliefs about women, and I've noticed that I've cleared like beliefs. Like I mentioned the belief, like it's not safe to disagree. That was a belief I had, but I also later found the belief it's not safe to disagree with women. Right. So you can like play with the words and have different concepts, different dandelions, if you will. So like I've had, that was in a previous relationship I had, I noticed this trigger coming up, and then I went back, I did this MDMA experience, but I was also like finding all these beliefs. I was trying to understand why I had that trigger with her, and then I found all these new beliefs about like it's not safe to disagree with women, like adding on the concept of the opposite sex. And then, oh, well, of course, like if I have that belief, then there's going to be a protector part in me that's going to get defensive and so forth. And then I'm going to try to like override that. And like, you know, there's all these things that our psyche can be kind of disintegrated, right? But the more you liberate these parts of you and let go of the stories, then you can be more integrated and in harmony.
And people can find more about this at your website, which I think is thehumanliberation.co. And there you have got like a number of testimonials that, people should go and and check those out. And then they can schedule one of these sessions with you, because I imagine this is something that's like more effective when it's done with a practitioner as opposed to trying to DIY it.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So my experience, I'd already been doing 10 years of personal growth and even self-therapy type of experiences before I found this. But I still, my friend came across this and he was my first coach, if you will. And so I was his client. And so that was really helpful in learning how the process works, but also just letting somebody facilitate me so I could just kind of more sit back and relax and not try to be doing two things at once, being a facilitator and receiving the facilitation. However, I do believe people can learn it. And I was learning it I'm a very DIY, like autodidactic, self-driven learner. That's why I've created this business, because I just started learning it myself. Most people don't, because it's, you know, whatever, it doesn't make them tick the way it makes me tick. But I do believe in a future where, like, you know, you can just, it's like everyone's talking about morning routines and like doing a 10-minute walk in the morning or 10-minute journaling or 10 minutes of push-ups. It's like I've just incorporated this into my morning routine over the years. Like, it's just 10, 15 minutes of clearing a belief. I actually think it's such a simple thing that you could learn it. However, the most important skill is actually learning how to find the beliefs. So that's really what I bring my clients, is like, there's a much more of an art to the actual investigation to find out what the beliefs are. And the other thing I would add is that especially if you have like more severe trauma and you haven't had experience with doing self-therapy, it's sort of like psychedelics. Like have discretion and like have a facilitator. If you're not accustomed to doing that, there's some people that have severe amount of trauma, and I would definitely not recommend doing this by yourself, because we can be hitting some deep childhood stuff. But yeah, if you go to my website, I typically work with entrepreneurs, you know, high performers, people who are driven and ambitious, but they're kind of held back by this inner friction. And so if you're interested, you can book a session and we can do a deep dive and see what's going on for you, as well as I'll just give you a sampling. We'll make a list of initial audit of beliefs that you have. And then we'll choose one of those beliefs and we'll clear it out. Like that's just a free gift for you. We'll clear out one of those beliefs so you can experience it.
Okay, so that's kind of like a free session that you offer, right? Or
yeah, I mean, it's sort of a just to be candid, it's a combination of a sort of consultation call as well as a free gift session where I genuinely want people to experience this. And however, I would love to connect with you and see if you're a good fit to work with me and do the program, which is just like basically 12 weeks working with me one-on-one for 1 hour a week. And that's when we can really make the big, you know, clearing out as many dandelions as we can, because you'll have a big shift if you clear out one belief, and it'll be like a big light bulb moment. But it's really after the 12 weeks, you're clearing out like 50 to 60 core beliefs. It's a big night and day kind of experience.
Okay, right on, man. So we'll move on to our listener questions here. And we've got six, and they range from biohacking and nootropics questions to some weirdness, for sure. But first, I need to mention that what you hear or find on my website is not medical advice. I'm not a doctor. I'm just an experienced, unlicensed self-experimenter practicing free speech in talking about my extensive experiences, almost 15 years now, and my interpretations of published science. And I'd urge everyone to go and check out the guide I did on how to biohack smart and safe, where I break down risk mitigation philosophy for doing biohacking, for using smart drugs, for using all sorts of supplements. And actually, I recently updated that piece of content. I improved it quite a bit. I'm actually quite proud of that piece of content. If someone's kind of green to this whole wacky world, then they should really check that out. And please do consult a doctor professional about any like serious decisions you're making about nootropics, about your supplements. Yeah, talk to a doctor and ideally get a second opinion, because sometimes you get that second or third opinion from additional doctors and that clears up some crappy advice that you may have gotten from Dr. Number one. And then I'll also mention that so what we provide here in this podcast is, of course, just information. And if you're a person that is that you keep hitting a glass ceiling on something despite the abundance of high quality information available, then yeah, you probably need to take that leap into like getting some more serious coaching. And so that would be the kind of thing that Joel does on the belief side of things. And then I will also work with people putting together bespoke stacks of nootropics, smart drugs, biohacking, technology, and habits. And I will work with people for 90-day sprints. We will pick out a medium-term, ambitious, yet accomplishable 90-day goal, and I will keep them accountable to that. I call that lean life coaching. And linked below, wherever people are watching or listening, they're going to find a form on my website for that. And this form, I contend, is one of the best forms you will encounter on the internet. I worked really hard to make a stupendous form. And I dare say that even just filling out this form will be a introspective, valuable exercise. And I respond to everyone who submits that form, even if I can't really work with them. And you get a copy of that form. So that is going to be linked below. So yeah, let's dive into the first question from Barbara. Take it away, Joel.
All right. So Barbara says, I'm looking for someone with experience helping individuals manage the complex combination of bipolar type 1 and narcolepsy type 2. My 18-year-old son has been on olanzapine and lithium carbonate for 3 years, which has successfully controlled his bipolar symptoms, but unfortunately caused massive weight gain. While we are currently working with a holistic psychiatrist to oversee the process, my ultimate goal is to safely and entirely wean him off of these medications to heal his brain, and I want to find the right supplements and team members to sustain him through this transition. His situation is further complicated by a few distinct health challenges, including asthma, sleep apnea, and a diagnosis of hypermobility. This hypermobility makes his tissues more prone to injury, which factored into a freak accident a year ago where he suffered a severe traumatic eye injury. He has already had one surgery to realign his misaligned eyeball, but he still suffers from double vision and is facing a second operation. We have been using neurofeedback intermittently for a year to support him, but I want to know what additional biohacking protocols, targeted lifestyle adjustments, and supplements can help stabilize his brain and protect his body during this drug weaning process.
Okay. Ooh, Barbara, this sounds like a tough situation. So you and your son have my sympathy here. And I have to reiterate what I just said, which I'm sure she already knows, which is that my recommendations should be vetted very thoroughly by your, she said she had a holistic psychiatrist, I think. And so, yeah, so that's great. But I did some research on this. And when it comes to bipolar and mental health struggles, there is a low-hanging fruit solution that she doesn't mention, and that is high-dose niacin, or vitamin B3, as it's called. And niacin B3, okay, it's not the sexiest supplement, but it really does have an impressive track record of healing mental health struggles. Niacin was kind of brought onto the scene by the people that created Alcoholics Anonymous. And they found that high-dose niacin made this really transformative difference for people struggling with alcoholism. It makes a really big difference with schizophrenia. I had written and recently re-released and updated my meta-analysis on niacin. And when I do these meta-analysis articles, I do anecdotal analysis of just seeing what normal people are talking about. And I was impressed by the range of mental health struggles that niacin often cured, or it brought people into a real functional state of homeostasis. The only major downside that I can see with this is that high-dose niacin makes you get a pretty strong flushing effect. You're, especially at high doses, your skin is just going to feel like it's on fire for a good 15, 20, 25 minutes. But looking at the anecdotal evidence, I think that burn daily is really worth the mental health issues that it fixes. And niacin is extraordinarily safe. And so, yeah, check with your psychiatrist, with your doctor team, and ask them if there would be any conflicts between what he currently has to be on and niacin, because that turns mental health things around in a lot of cases. And then I went down the research rabbit hole a little bit more on this, and there was a 2013 paper that looked at a stack of Alcar and CoQ10 as being very helpful in cases of bipolar disorder. Let's see, another low-hanging fruit option would be uridine, which is a pretty great nootropic. And there was a 2011 6-week trial that showed how its mitochondrial mechanism was very helpful. And that was with adolescents. And I guess, is an 18-year-old considered an adolescent? I think so, right? And then a not so low-hanging fruit option, perhaps a more risky option, but a risk that could be managed, would be memantine. And memantine is a pharmaceutical. I have tried it a couple of times as like a smart drug, and it was a little bit intense, so I only tried it a few times. But there was a double-blind, placebo-controlled 16-week study in Iran. Actually, they do a lot of very good science in Iran. That this is an interesting thing I found. Joel, is when I look through PubMed, I'm always surprised by the high quality of science coming out of Iran. And so there was a high quality study that indicated that that would be helpful. But again, memantine is really one of those things that you don't want to take without a doctor's blessing on it. And then moving on to the other question, which is, what about the weaning off? And so she would look at doing a transition from lithium carbonate to lithium to low dose lithium orotate. And lithium orotate is actually a pretty awesome brain power anti-aging agent. I've taken it before in a number of stacks. Some people say that lithium orotate will increase your IQ. It supports BDNF. It supports neurogenesis. And so I think that is a pretty good weaning option. And then she'd want to look at GABAergic and cholinergic support for getting off of the drug with a crazy name that I'm not even going to try to pronounce. And so you could look at GABA supplements. You could just supplement GABA, and you can take different forms of choline. And supplementing choline is almost always a good idea. I took some choline before this very call. And then for narcolepsy, well, the option for narcolepsy that almost all biohackers know about is modafinil. And that is a very powerful narcoleptic drug, but that drug can also have a lot of very strange, odd effects. A lot of people don't respond well to it. The flip side of narcolepsy is going to be like sleep deprivation. And one of the best tools that I found for that is L-tyrosine. And then talking about weight loss. And so there's a lifestyle hack or a lifestyle stack that works quite consistently in the weight loss department just because of the basic laws of thermodynamics. And that is fasting in combination with weight training, specifically variable resistance weight training. And so a lot of people have kind of got the wrong idea about exercise and weight loss. And you will see this almost anytime you step foot into a gym, is you'll see some people in the gym that are overweight and they are sweating like a pig on treadmills or the bike machines. And this is really often a counterintuitive way to try to lose weight, because that cardio boosts up your cortisol, and then your body says, oh, we have all this cortisol, so we should hold on to some of these fat stores. And weight training is actually the best way to lose weight. Or there was a book I read that was entitled Lifting Weights is a Waste of Time, and it made a compelling case that variable resistance training is a much better way to go about doing that. And variable resistance training is, you'll see people using the bands that provide continuous resistance. And then there's a couple of products that are supposed to kind of take this to the next level. So doing something like high reps with blood flow restriction bands, doing weight training. And of course, weight training is a really consistent way of fortifying mental health. Because as your muscles grow stronger, the mind grows stronger with it. That is pretty consistent. And then the final thing that I noted on this is kind of on a meta level, which I might be interested in talking to this guy to like to find out how motivated he is to get better, because yeah, that kind of makes all the difference. How comfortable is he, like where he's at versus, yeah, his level of motivation. And for Barbara as his mother, boy, that's kind of her job, is to like sit down with him and have some very kind of probably some longer conversations about finding out like what it is that really motivates him in life, and then tying a recovery weaning program back to his internal motivations. And once those are kind of crystal, and you never know what it is, like 18-year-old guy, it might be that like he wants to get a girlfriend, or it might be that he wants to see the world, or he wants to go to college, or I don't know, maybe he wants to become a celebrity gamer streaming on the internet. Who knows what his, like, yeah, what he's really into. That's kind of her job to figure that out. And then for him, attach that goal to the lifestyle kind of things that are going to support the pharmacological biohacking stack. And so those lifestyle things would be, yeah, something like a mindfulness practice, something like NoFap. And boy, that could be tricky as a mother to regulate. But yeah, for like someone, for a young man in that position, like pretty close to the number one thing I would say is like, no porn for 30 days and see how much better you feel. And then do some weightlifting at the same time and try to get out and talk to some pretty girls every once in a while. But I'll let you jump in now, Joel.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, I think the motivation piece is huge, so that he's leading the process and she's guiding the process. A couple little nuggets of just things I love was functional mushrooms. I love using lion's mane in particular, and that's got the neurogenesis. You know, and that's not necessarily going to be a game changer for this complex situation, but I really appreciate lion's mane, and then I appreciate getting outside, getting in the sun, and getting my feet on the grass, and getting the earthing, grounding. Just those basic like ancestral things. Just even just making sure that's 10 minutes a day, you're like getting your feet on the grass and things like that to just support the body overall, support the mental wellness. But outside of that, on the mental health and the trauma piece or the subconscious piece that I speak to, it's something, you know, I mean, first of all, kudos for you to like to be on this path of like holistic psychiatrist. The goal is to get off the medication, and you're looking at all these different tools. And so that's a really special thing that you have that intention. And I also appreciate the mindfulness about like, you don't want to just go cold turkey necessarily off the medication. And by the way, this is, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not an expert at all on when it comes to medications. But in terms of the overall goal to get back, to kind of restore your son, help him restore to more natural way of being, if you will, I think that's a great goal. And so I think it's interesting to see, you know, obviously I don't know him. I don't know you, Barbara. And, you know, there's lots more questions I would have. But like, I always get curious about how much of any situation when it comes to the mind and the brain and mental wellness is related to past experiences growing up that are stored in the body and in the mind. And so that can be, you know, that can be a difficult, if that is a subject that is less in your comfort zone, then that can be difficult to go into, especially as his mother, because if there's a relationship thing there, if there's some personal dynamic or history there that could be a factor in his experience, then that can be hard to even look at as a mom. You know, I think it's really important to be compassionate towards oneself. But I do have a client or who just finished up with me who, she's in her 60s or 70s. So she also has kids, and part of her process of healing at this stage of life was letting go of some guilt and letting go of the self-criticism around her own, realizing that she had done things to her kids that she didn't want to do. But she was also on medications, and she's been on a whole journey of letting go. I think she had bipolar diagnosis as well. And she just had a remarkable 12 weeks with me, like saying that she came in with like 11 out of 10 self-loathing inner critics. And then by the end, she said it's zero. And we cleared a lot of deep core wounds that I think is contributing to her actually eventually getting off those medications. I can't remember the details on like how far along she is with letting go of the medications. But the point is that like I actually do believe that you can get off those medications and looking at some of the roots and in the subconscious, whether it's doing belief work or it's just looking at other modalities like somatic experiencing or IFS therapy, and like just looking at seeing what's going on internally, that can be another like tool in the toolkit.
Okay. I'm going to roll with the next question here, which is a slightly trollish, snarky response that we got to my video, "Can you be Big Cow and married?" And some guy responded, "I've always wanted to have rewarding tantric sex. I've never had sex, even though I worship all things sex. I've kissed girls intimately, but that's as far as my bases go. Do you think I should have followed the advice of Black Pigeon Speaks and looked for a nice, submissive Asian girl who desires men like me? Perhaps go to Vietnam and live there. I wonder if there are classes where couples can practice and hone the art of tantric sex yoga and other rewarding body energy works for the body. That's the kind of paradise I'm talking about. How do I end up on an island environment like that?" Okay, as far as the geography question here, I think you'd want to go to, it's called Koh Phangan, aka Tantra Island in Thailand. So yes, the place he is fantasizing about, it does exist. Although I have heard rather weird things about it. I'm not sure if I would recommend going there. And especially not to this guy, because he's saying he's a virgin. And I, years ago, actually wrote the most thorough guide on the internet for men about how to lose your virginity meaningfully. And I broke down 33 different steps to losing your virginity in a meaningful way. So I'm going to link to that article. And I've worked with a number of coaching clients over the years that came to me after they read that article. And very few of them had to go through every single one of those 33 steps. But going through at least a couple of them will, yeah, get you a lot further than intimate kissing. And then he also says, "Should I try to find a nice, submissive Asian girl?" And only if you are really, really serious about stopping with your procrastinating. Because I wrote another article that he should probably check out. I entitled this one, "The End of the Golden Age of Dating Abroad." There's this stereotype that exists, which is increasingly fictional. There's this stereotype of the submissive Asian girl or submissive South American women, submissive women in Eastern Europe that are like really easy to date or get into a relationship with. And there's a kernel of truth in this, that in the cultures with more defined masculine feminine roles, those kind of women can be, well, that's kind of what I did. I married a Bulgarian girl, and I regard that as the best decision of my life. So there's a kernel of truth in those stereotypes, but because of globalization, women from some little village in Thailand are increasingly like women in Orange County, California. So if this guy was really serious about personal development, learning game, and taking action now, there's a little bit of a chance that he may do better trying to travel abroad. But the window on that, the golden age of dating abroad, is really drawing to a close. So my number one recommendation would probably go back to the first thing that he mentioned, which is Tantra and a tantric self-cultivation practice is actually a pretty good place for even virgins, even sexually frustrated virgins, to start, because it cultivates greater sexual self-control, greater sexual sovereignty. It cultivates your capacity to channel your sexual energy in a productive way. And that, in combination with personal growth and learning game and getting outside of your comfort zone, is going to prime you much better to get what I think he desires. So I'll include the link to my article with 9 steps to becoming a tantric man. Anything to add to that one, Joel?
Yeah, just broadly, I mean, Socrates said, know thyself, right? Carl Jung said, make the unconscious conscious. So my question is always like, what's your why? And do you know yourself? Are you living consciously and being aware of your different human needs? Like, there's a need for sexuality and sexual pleasure, and then there's a need for, you know, companionship and intimacy and connection and that like attachment with a woman, the meaningful connection, right? And so these are all different areas of the human experience. And so just, are you aware from personal development standpoint, are you aware of these different desires in you? Are you attending to that? Or are you blanking anything out? Are you denying any part of yourself and letting another part just like drive the car, take the steering wheel, right? And so I don't know you at all, but like those are just questions so that you can just be living consciously and knowing yourself and developing and integrating, right? Because the sexual topic is so essential. It's often in this culture, there's a lot of repression around that, and we push these desires down, and we're told to not, you know, often not express that in certain ways. But in another way, sometimes the culture says to just glorify that and then push down the other needs for just like a more wholesome, meaningful connection. And so just inviting awareness around those different areas.
Yeah, we've got one hell of a cultural whore Madonna complex going on, don't we?
Yeah, there's a lot to get back.
Okay, next question.
All right. This is, I'm not going to be able to pronounce this person's name, Laheguru Khalsa, responding to Unleash Epic Creativity with This Drug Comprehensive Guide, says, I'm watching your nicotine video, and I know you use liquid nicotine. What about nicotine patches? Dave Asprey mentions the 10 milligram dose as a maximum per day. What's your feedback on this?
Nicotine patches are probably better if you have an addictive personality type. I do not. So I'm able to cycle on and off nicotine in USP solution. And I enjoy the experience with USP solution of that nicotine hit, that harsh taste in the mouth, and the bloom of creativity in my mind that follows that. Nicotine patches, I've always been a bit skeptical of, because with my supplementation, I really try to get pure pharmaceutical grade or organic supplements with almost everything that I consume. I try to get that quality of purity. And nicotine patches are a product for smokers, and I just don't trust products that are sold at gas stations and Walmarts and corner store pharmacies quite that much. And I think that Asprey's recommendation of keeping it limited to a 10 milligram daily dose is a pretty good idea. I know that Waiguru is doing a lot of other biohacking things. So if you're doing a lot of other things to support cognition and brain power, that kind of dose of nicotine, I think, is ample. Next question.
Respecting the word on Twitter, what would you recommend for repairing the brain from NyQuil, which could possibly cause memory loss?
Yeah, NyQuil can do some nasty things. So with repairing the brain, well, the brain already has a number of systems in place for repairing itself. And I think the most consistent tools for supporting the neurogenesis, neuroplasticity, for supporting that inherent repair capacity are the peptides BPC-157 along with CMAX and Selenk. When I did my meta-analysis of BPC-157, I was pretty impressed with the anecdotes of people talking about the brain repair benefits of it. Former narcotics drugs addicts that had serious kind of brain damage, and they used BPC-157, and that seemed to repair it. And then CMAX and Selenk are the BDNF dream team. I've worked with clients that had one client in particular that had vision issues. She was a boxer, and she sustained a serious injury to the vision center of her brain, and it knocked out part of her visual field. And so I put her on a stack of CMAX, Selenk, and paracetam. And it did not completely reverse the vision loss, but it made a difference on it. So I turned to those peptides. And then he's talking about memory loss. And for that, you're going to need to have a couple of habits in place that support memory. And I've got a dream team for memory support. These are things that actually make a difference in your recall ability with semantic and episodic memory. And the dream team on this is mnemonics practice, SuperMemo app, which is a flashcard app. I use that to practice my memory retention for hundreds of factoids related to biohacking, philosophy, history, all of my interests, along with the languages that I've learned. And then finally, brain training dual and back, which is this boring brain training game that sharpens your executive function. And it expands the RAM of your conscious mind. And so this helps with the constitution, reconstitution part of memory, where memory is getting drawn out of those long-term stores and brought up into the conscious mind and then interpreted and then put back in storage. And dual and back is one of the best tools for that. So yeah, with a combination of taking some good peptides for maybe a month or two, and then maintaining a memory practice for something more like 3 to 4 months, I think you could really bounce back from that brain damage. If you have anything to add, you can do so, Joel, or just read us the next question.
All I would add is, when it comes to memory, I know that deep sleep is really important for memory. My favorite tool, I'm not like a hardcore biohacker, but I'm like a medium or light biohacker. My favorite tool is the SR1 Delta Sleeper, which is a little cube that you can tape to your collarbone, and then you press a button and it connects to your brain. It's sending a signal to your brain that puts your brain into delta wave, and it puts you into deeper sleep faster. And I've found that to be, I swear by that tool, with increasing my deep sleep. So that could be helpful for memory.
Really? Okay. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're not such a Padawan as a biohacker, because I have even heard of that one. And oh, it man. Sounds.
I love it. It's my favorite. I heard about it on Ben Greenfield like 5 years ago. The inventor, I believe his name is Michael, was on Ben Greenfield some years ago. I think it's just called. See if I can find the website.
Yeah, so it just it modulates you into a delta state. And it's not too uncomfortable wearing it?
No, I mean, you just put a piece of double-sided tape, and then you tape it to the collarbone. Yeah, it's deltasleeper.com. No affiliation. I just love the tool. It stays on for 21 minutes. And helps you like go to deeper sleep faster. But then if you wake up in the middle of the night, you can press the button again and helps you get back. And yeah, I've just found the deep sleep, it increases. And yeah, I'll even use it for like a 20-minute power nap. And it just increases the restoration. So I tell that to as many people as possible, this particular tool.
Okay, right on. I'm going to link up to that in the show notes. Do you want to take the next question?
Yeah. Yeah, let's see. Skid out on Odyssey, responding to 14 things girls love to talk about, avoid the friend zone, content for chemistry, says, another question is, do you really want to date her if you share nothing in common?
Okay. Well, probably not if you share nothing in common, but this was a video where I made kind of this contrarian point about dating. And it was a point that I made to guys, which is that in your first date with a lady, you probably shouldn't drone on about cryptocurrency investing, or your favorite football team, or whatever the conspiracy theory is that has you fascinated at the moment. And I named in this article 14 different topics that girls love to talk about that are conducive to chemistry. And I have kind of this counterintuitive philosophy that I recommend in dating, which is that the points of commonality in the beginning of the relationship are not actually that important if you have a solid seduction methodology that you're going to proceed with in the relationship. And this connects to my interest too, Tantra, is that if you can properly make love to a woman and spike her oxytocin, she is going to adopt interests and values from you. So I contend that things like enjoying the same genre of music, I contend that those kind of things are like really not that important in the early stage of the relationship. Anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I did a podcast on my podcast, which is called The Joel Blind Show, called The Psychology of Romantic Love. And that was based on Nathaniel Brandon. You know him? Psychologist. He wrote the six pillars of self-esteem. Yeah, he also wrote this book, The Psychology of Romantic Love. And so it gets really into like fleshing out the philosophy and psychology of like mature love. And so I've thought a lot about this and like healthy, like conscious, mature, self-esteeming person. What's that?
Pragma. Of the six Greek words for love, mature love is pragma.
Ah, I didn't know that one. I'm going to start learning those different words for love. That's really useful. But yeah, there's the mature love and there's like being seen for your true self and like having high self-esteem, two high self-esteem people come together. I think it's the greatest level of love. I think you also want that masculine, feminine polarity is in the chemistry piece. And so I think there's a lot of truth in what you're saying around like, you know, a woman can grow with you. And there's like a lot that can, if you connect through that more energetics of the attraction process, there's a lot there. And I think it's essential ultimately to have like each person as an autonomous, self-esteeming person. And so I just think it's something to be aware of around, I've thought a lot about these different elements. There's sort of like the primal, right? Like the deeper parts of the brain maybe around the attraction and the biology and like the masculine and feminine polarity. And then there's what I would say is more in the prefrontal cortex around, is each person living consciously, living with self-assertiveness, living purposefully, living with wholeness and like, you know, using their mind and not just being, you know, not just necessarily being on default to their biology, but also activating, living consciously. That's like essential for the mature, what is it called? Pragma?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's just something to be aware of there.
Okay. Here's something I haven't quite figured out. And I've gotten questions about this in previous Q&As. Actually, my wife and I have talked about this, is where do you find, okay, let's say you're a single person. I know there's a lot of single people out there. Where do you find that Aristotelian mean in between saying, I have done enough personal growth work to, I've done enough personal growth work, or the person that I'm attracted to, that I'm into, they have done enough personal growth work that we can get into a relationship? Because you see people doing no personal growth work, and then very predictably, they have disastrous, awful relationships. But then you also see people that they procrastinate. Oh, I need to go to therapy a little bit more before I get into a relationship. And then they get older and older and older. And a harsh truth is that as you get older, you just become less and less and less likely to be able to get into a relationship with a really high quality person. So I have not quite, I don't have a great piece of advice on striking that balance of when have you done enough personal growth that you can jump right into a relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of brings up my meta philosophy on advice, right? It's like advice, only use advice that's applicable, that you can filter through your own situation and you can think critically and creatively about, because there's no one prescription that's going to give you the answer to that question. It's a very profound question, honestly. I've thought about that a lot as well. And I believe that you just need to know yourself and be able to intuit the situation and recognize that both, it's a both and, right? You're going to have personal growth. If you're bringing the right mindset to it, you can have personal growth through the relationship. And if you are not in a relationship or not in a relationship yet, then there's a great opportunity for the introspection and the self-knowledge to be able to bring a lot more to a future relationship. And so you just want to, it's just the art of living consciously and knowing that, you know, perfect is the enemy of good type of thing. But you definitely, you know, you definitely are going to need some sort of foundation of personal development. Otherwise, you just end up, a lot of people in the culture end up just projecting past each other all the time, their own childhood stuff, and they don't even realize it. So at least having an awareness, like, I think the best thing for people to realize is like, I'm very likely projecting all the time. Like, can you just be aware, like, how am I projecting in this relationship? You know, then you have like a level of like ability to self-monitor. And then two people can come together. If they both have that philosophy, even if they have a lot more stuff to each grow on, if each person is like, okay, I'm going to take responsibility for my projections and my emotions, then you can grow together, you know?
Okay. Okay. All right. Next, I heard from Ted on Odyssey, and he responded to the video that I did on Flat Earth. Joel, have you gotten into Flat Earth content?
So, first of all, I'm just a radical free thinker and open to all ideas and any theories. I have not specifically dived into this one. However, I have... I believe it's very healthy for people to ask questions and question cultural premises in terms of free thinking and just anything that is true. Truth is unshakable by definition. So if something is true, then you can question it forever and it will never stop being true. So it's worth questioning things that people might take for granted. And especially in a society that there's so much manipulation and control around information, that it's a really, can be a really healthy thing. But a lot of conspiracy theories or whatever can definitely be a rabbit hole that can suck you away from other things in life. So there's always that.
Yeah. Amen. I did this video on Flat Earth and why I remain a Glober. And it seems to get a lot of comments. So there's actually an important personal growth point on this, and this is why I don't do a whole lot of content about the wide bevy of conspiratorial type of topics. I would probably actually get a lot more views if I was doing conspiracy of the week kind of videos, but and it is good to question mainstream kind of narratives, but there's a balance that must be struck here, because this can distract from what you can actually change. If the Illuminati or the Jesuits or whatever are hiding the flat earth from the multitudes, what can you do to change that? What can you do to change the banking system? What can you do to change all these monolithic evil institutions that loom over society? The truth is not much. And in the past, I've gone through different phases where I got pretty excited about different kinds of like radical politics. And I said, I'd find typically radical politics on the right. That's what kind of appealed to me naturally. And I would say, I would say this is the solution for a more just kind of society. But the real solution is the personal one. The interpersonal, your personal freedom and your interpersonal freedom matter dramatically more than political freedom when it comes to living a good and meaningful life. And despite being a person that's been like pretty interested in politics and conspiracy theories and ideology Throughout my life, I'm now at a point, I'm actually kind of apathetic about all of those kinds of things because of the amount of personal and interpersonal freedom that I have. Because I've so passionately pursued a path of personal growth and a biological sovereignty, that's put me in a position where I've really achieved my definition of freedom in life, and I moved to a country that aligns with my politics and worldview. So I'm not that interested. I'm not all that interested in things like flat Earth or these kind of theory. Maybe I'll consume this content for entertainment value, I suppose, and to be a little bit informed. But it's not something that personally I'm going to spend much time or energy on, because there's just so much more ROI in working on yourself and your health and your relationships.
Yeah, I echo a lot of that. And I've always focused on personal freedom before political freedom. And I also see it intertwined. And I mean, you know, my podcast, is no secret that I'm a radical libertarian, anarchist, voluntarist, but my focus in the podcast is the personal sphere of control. And I believe that we can actually create new paradigms that are based on personal freedom when we heal our childhood experience, our childhood conditioning, and we break these cycles. And I think that's actually the root of why you have all these control structures. You have the centralized banking, you have all the things. It's like, because there's like these power grabs that are rooted in psychology. And so you can't control the political realm, but you can control your own personal life. And so I think there's like a dosage thing here. You know, I've kind of maybe invested a small percentage of my time to understand things like centralized banking and the history of power structures. And, you know, I've gone deep on the JFK thing. Like, that was really actually helpful for me to understand what is the environment in which I'm living historically, economically, politically, so that I can actually make better choices for my own personal life and to just be living free and not be living in under illusions. I think that is part of your own personal freedom, is not being bought into illusions. But there's a percentage that I've always capped it at a very small percentage of my attention is consuming that type of stuff, because everything to me has always been way geared towards personal growth. How am I treating myself? How am I developing my health? How am I treating my friends? How am I raising, you know, how can I raise the next generation more healthfully? How can I be empowered? Be sovereign, take care of my life's purpose, be excited about my life, be creative, be financially well off. These types of things are way in your sphere of control. And that's like, was it Albert Camus said, like, just be so free that your very existence is an act of rebellion. So focusing on the sphere of control for sure.
Okay. Amen. All right. Finally, I got a question for you. I have a challenging telephone conversation coming up, and maybe talking to you about it very concisely, because our podcast, we don't have much more time left here. But I got this difficult conversation. My wife was talking to my mother on the phone the other day, and they were talking about how my brother got cancer when he was 17 years old in high school. And it was like one of the most difficult things that ever happened to my family. And it was especially hard on my mother. And my wife told my mother that I blamed her low quality food for my brother getting cancer. And that's not exactly true. What I have explained to my wife several times is that my family health was a pretty low priority for us growing up. My parents were like quintessential normie American standard diet, going to Walmart four times a week. And we had a bunch of junk food in the house all the time. And I think there's causation between that and a 17-year-old getting cancer. But my mother is pretty upset about this. And I need to talk to her about this. And I want to be honest with her, but also, I got to walk a fine line on this. So do you have any ideas for me?
Yeah, that sounds like a difficult conversation. What's your why? Like, how much do you value your relationship with her? How close are you with her? What's like the desired outcome?
Quite a bit. Yeah. Let's see. I value relationship with her quite a bit. And I guess desired outcome would be for her to understand that I blame the mainstream normie American culture for some things that didn't go well in our life growing up. And I blame this mainstream conformist kind of culture a lot more than her, because she was a very devoted mother, doing her best. But her and my father were like super conformist kind of people. And so I feel like there's a little bit of blame that falls on them. I feel like more blame actually falls on my father, because I feel it's the man's responsibility to like provide that kind of leadership in the home, to say that, hey, we're going to have a culture of health in our home. So I think I probably blame him even a little bit more. But I guess I'd like to have a conversation where I explain that I think that the mainstream culture is to blame. And I think this is a thing to maybe not be regretful of at this point, but maybe a introspective opportunity to like be more independent thinking about things.
Okay. Has she become more independent thinking recently, or is she still in the same conformist?
Conformist.
Right.
And she's at that age where very hard to change that. So.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to lie to her. I don't want to lie to her. Might be a tricky conversation.
Yeah, I mean, just from what you shared, a couple of thoughts, like, A, Stephen Covey said, seek to understand prior to seeking to be understood, so that you can begin the conversation with seeing if you can be thorough, with understanding, with like true like curiosity and non-defensiveness, just like actually understanding what she's upset about, and ask her to share more about that. And then no reactions, just like deep listening for a good solid 10-20 minutes, whatever it takes at the beginning, to really understand, and then maybe reflecting back what you just heard her say, so that, and then asking, is that accurate? And like making sure that you don't try to defend yourself or share your perspective right away necessarily, because then she's going to be more open to hearing it once you've demonstrated that you want to hear her perspective. And then she might actually have a guard down to hear your perspective. And then, yeah, once you actually share yours, doing that with just speaking in I statements, and like, I believe this, or I feel this. But I think with the word blame is like, it has a lot of connotation around judgment, like moralistic judgment and bad. And even if it's correct, nobody, like in terms of efficacy in the conversation, nobody really wants to admit that they did something wrong or they're bad. And so that's when the defensiveness can come back up. That's kind of why I asked like what your why is, because if the desire is to be right, then that's going to be you know, it could trigger her if the desire is to get more close and connected and to just be understood, which it sounds like that's what it really is, then maybe you can just ask her, like, hey, I want to share my perspective. Like, once you've heard her out, you're like, all right, I want to be heard out now. Can I just speak for the next few minutes? Just, I'll let you know when I'm finished. I'm going to just speak for a few minutes about my experience. And then maybe you could summarize what you heard me say. You know, it takes time to slow down like that. It's so much, we often culturally are default to just like fast conversation and talking in just short, a few sentences at a time and back and forth and getting interrupted. And then like, and I think if you can slow it down and you just like be explicit, hey, would you be willing to just let me, now that I've heard you out, would you be willing to let me speak for the next 5 minutes and I'll tell you when I'm done. And then, you know, maybe you can reflect back what you heard me say. And then, you know, you can maybe let it unfold from there. But like curiosity, taking your time, and just not being tempted to disagree with her right away. Like, there's not an expiration date on your disagreement. You expressing that, so you can give her the chance to share fully, and then if your desire is just to be understood, but not for her to change. Like, if she gets the vibe that you're not trying to change her, you just want her to understand you. You know, then she might be more open to it. But if there's any vibe in you that's like trying to tell her she's bad or wrong or trying to change her, then it might just backfire. It does sound like there's not a whole lot you can do in terms of influencing her to think differently. But you also want to be honest and share what you think. Does that resonate?
Yeah, 10 to 20 minutes of focused listening. Okay, good suggestion. Finally, do you have any biohacking questions from me that I can answer real quick?
Anything on adrenal fatigue? I'm working with a really nice practitioner, a functional practitioner, who's really good at this. But so I have some supplements going and so forth. But any quick things on that general topic?
Ah, that is not something that I've researched thoroughly. So I will not venture an ultra-crepidarian opinion on that. Ultra-crepidarian means to give an opinion on something that you do not know about.
Interesting. Fair enough.
Okay, right on. I'm Jonathan with Limitless, looking forward to a continued conversation with you.
Digital wilderness of polished fake gurus and pride, where every cheap influencer claims to be an absolute guide. Jonathan and Joel take up the podcast mic to offer a rare kind of clarity that the internet doesn't quite like. They don't pretend to hold the answers to every mystery or grand design. If they lack the deep expertise, they'll draw a protective line. They look the audience in the eye and state the simple truth clear, bypassing the endless noise that the modern consumers hear. They stand against the ultra-crepidarian trend, the modern decree, rejecting the loud assertions of a hollow authority. For that word simply means, if you break down the clinical view, a person who expresses opinions on matters outside the scope of their knowledge or expertise. A heavy question arrives about a young man's complex fight, balancing bipolar, type 1, and narcolepsy in the night. The host paused at the gravity, refusing to play the doctor's part, admitting this intricate medical matrix is beyond their biohacking art. They won't prescribe a casual stack or guess at a winning design, when a human life is balancing on such a highly sensitive line.
than an aspirational romantic. Ask how to find a tantric paradise state. Wondering if they should travel far to find a submissive foreign mate. While the next writer asks for a cure to mend a heavy foggy head. From relying on too much NyQuil before they crawled into bed. The duo speaks with honesty, cutting through the fantasy design. Reminding the listener that basic lifestyle habits must first align. They stand against the ultra-crepidarian trend, the modern decree. Rejecting the loud assertions of a hollow authority. For that word simply means, if you break down the clinical view, a person who expresses opinions on matters outside the scope of their knowledge or expertise. Let it dive straight into the alternative internet space. Challenging round earth models and demanding a scientific case. Invoking Eric Dube's list, questioning garbology's core. And why cautious postulates are matching up to the mainstream lore. They bring up central bank and corruption and dark hidden elite schemes. Asking why the masses are blind to these conspiratorial themes. Jonathan and Joel smile at the chaotic, sprawling digital right. But they keep their feet firmly planted on the pragmatic, empirical side. They stand against the ultra-crepidarian trend, the modern decree. Rejecting the loud assertions of a hollow authority. For that word simply means, if you break down the clinical view, a person who expresses opinions on matters outside the scope of their knowledge. Expertise. Three things, dear listener. Be so free that your very existence is an act of rebellion. If you got a question answered here, leave this an upvote. Three, edify yourself at limitless mindset.